the Ghost Goal Podcast.
There's been plenty of managerial sackings in the Premier League in the 2 weeks since we last recorded a pod. Graham Potter is out at Chelsea after losing 2-0 to Aston Villa on Saturday. Brendan Rodgers is out at Leicester after they dove further into a relegation battle with their loss to Crystal Palace. And as we mentioned on our last pod, Antonio Conte is also out at Tottenham as their top four hopes are spiraling with each game that passes. I'm Alex. Welcome to the Ghost Goal Podcast, episode 403. We're doing this early morning, if you can't tell by the incredibly bassy voice I'm whipping out. And I'm here with Javier. Javier, thanks for waking up early to get this done. It felt like it definitely needed to be done after all the action, yeah, managerial sackings we had yesterday.
I was calling for a pod last night, but we had stuff going on, and now we're coming to you early morning, like you said. So much to talk about, Alex. I was surprised that you were so like monotone and, you know, non-emotional about your dear Potter is out, Alex. What, we have to start there because it was kind of shocking news. Just happened yesterday, and you know, you thought that through the run of form that Chelsea had and kind of turned the corner, you know, by like having a really good, you know, two games against Dortmund.
I mean, realistically, it was only like one good week. It was a home win against Leeds in the Premier League, and then in the midweek, we overturned a 1-0 result against Dortmund, beat them in the Champions League to go through to the quarterfinal, and then the following weekend, who did we beat? We beat Leicester, I think. Leicester away. Other than that,
I guess my dad didn't fix it.
No, he did not. We need to get Greg back to Stamford Bridge, the good luck charm.
Because he left Stamford Bridge, right. He left the Stamford Bridge. Potter gets fired. But we should talk about the game as well. It was just, you know, same old Chelsea kind of. Lots of chances. You know, you had, especially that Mikhailo Mudryk one in the first half, you know, getting him in one-on-one, putting it straight at the keeper. You know, you got to think if he scores that goal, the whole stadium erupts, everyone goes crazy, and you got to think the energy in the team would have led to a different, completely different result. So, you know, over time, Watkins has just been on fire so far this season. It's incredible he got another goal in this one. And McGinn,
it's pretty easy when you gift him that goal, like Cucurella did, but
That was a huge gift.
I think there's two parts to why this sacking of Graham Potter happened when it's happened. I think a lot of people have been trying to gauge when exactly it would happen just because there are new owners at Chelsea. And, you know, under Roman Abramovich, he would have been fired months ago from previous bad runs of form. But it seemed like the new ownership were sticking with him. But why now? I think it's a combination of the sort of footballing decisions that were made, especially with the lineup going into that Aston Villa game. I was telling you and my brother Hugo that when I saw those lineups, it was like a back three with Reece James at right center back and Mark Cucurella at left center back and Koulibaly, the only recognized center back in the middle of that back three. Meanwhile, there was Ben Chilwell at left wing back and Ruben Loftus-Cheek at right wing back, further up the pitch, trying to provide the width. It just didn't make sense from the off. You knew Aston Villa were going to try balls in the air, over the top, trying, challenge that back line aerially. Even if there had been another center back in there, Graham Potter still went ahead and picked Cucurella and James to flank Koulibaly either side. He had Benoit Badiashile there to play instead. He could have headed that ball
lineup
forward. Yeah, it felt like you're playing against PSG online.
Let's get all the fastest players on the pitch. Play Ruben at wing back and Chilwell and James at center back. So I have all the speed in the team. It's like, you're right. Like I didn't actually see the starting lineup and like look at it because, you know, Chelsea are mid table and not important at all. So why would I be looking at a Chelsea lineup? But, you know, once you said that to me and I looked at the lineup, I was completely perplexed as well. especially because there had been a formula where it looked like maybe Chelsea had turned the corner a little bit with that with Cucurella left center back, Koulibaly at center back, and then Wesley Fofana at right center back. Now, you didn't have Wesley Fofana available for this game, which, you know, boo-hoo, Chelsea have spent, you know, so much money on.
Yeah, I'm not even boo-hooing about that. I'm saying that Badiashile could have started. And
he should have, yeah.
And Reece James could have played right back in a back four with Chilwell on the opposite side. And you didn't need Ruben Loftus-Cheek to be playing right wing back, because you're basically, like, you don't need Ruben to play right wing back, and you don't need Reece James to play right center back, unless you're playing against like Real Madrid, Bayern Munich, Manchester City, like some of the best teams in the world that are going to have possession and pin you back. That's like, Reece can be useful in that position then. But when you're playing against a team like Aston Villa, who have Unai Emery as their coach, and we all know he's a very, let's just say it, defensive. He operates as in a low block. His teams, all his best teams, operate in a low block and are very good at picking their moments to spring forward and counterattack with, you know, with efficiency. And they did that to perfection against Chelsea on Saturday. You know, with the mistake made by Cucurella, and then the set piece, the corner that eventually bounced out for McGinn to finish excellently. So the game management, particularly in that Villa game, is the first part of why I think Graham Potter's been sacked now. The other part is all of these reports that are leaking out now, you know, since the sacking has been made, about basically the players not knowing and or respecting him. Like, lots of reports of players, new and old, having to look up who Graham Potter is, making jokes about his last name in Harry Potter, like the kind of stuff that you see on Twitter, trolls on Twitter. Like, the players were doing that, which honestly, I think they deserve a little bit of the blame as well, because I did kind of respect Potter as a tactician during his time at Brighton. But he just wasn't able to make step up.
But what about going from like one of the top five coaches
at the very
in the world,
top level? You know, so
going from Tuchel, one of the best five coaches in the world,
right,
to
yeah.
some guy you have no clue who he is, who maybe you've seen on the sideline once or twice playing against a team who's been promoted, you know, not that long ago, probably 3 years ago now. Brighton, 4 years have been in the Premier League. But
oh no, they've been in the Premier League since like 2017 or 2018. So
yeah,
that's like
four or 5 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you know, they, for some of these players, especially new foreign players, like you said, I feel like they wouldn't know who Potter is. And I mean, Tuchel's won the Champions League. You know, all these players know who he was. To me, it would be a perplexing move. But some of these players, you know, why do you give Potter, what was it, a 7-year deal?
5-year.
5-year deal. Why do you give Potter a 5-year deal if you don't think that?
$21 million to Brighton, just a cash payment to, you know, take Potter and his coaching staff. So
it's going to end up costing Chelsea $60 million, $50 million, this whole fiasco just with the coach. And then they spent, you know, $500 million on signings that he wanted for a team. So now they're going to have to choose another coach to come in.
So that's where
I don't think
that's completely accurate, because the signings now, what the new ownership are trying to do, they're trying to do a more holistic top-down approach where, you know, these players that are signed are not just players signed for a particular manager. They're players signed within the framework of, you know, all of these new executives, like footballing directors, like Paul Winstanley, who we brought in from Brighton, and forgetting his name, something Lawrence, who we also brought in from Monaco. They were the ones who eventually convinced Bowley to sack Potter. And Paul Winstanley was at Brighton with Graham Potter and only left around like November of last year to come to Chelsea. So Paul Winstanley like has worked with Potter at Brighton before. You'd think he'd be a big proponent of Graham Potter. And even he saw like in these last few months that, you know, the things just weren't improving. It was just
apparently there
the
was
same
a clause
over
where if you guys
again.
Dropped to the bottom half of the table, they could fire Potter.
I hadn't seen that, but yeah, if that's confirmed, then that would be another reason why he's been fired now. If that's in the contract.
I mean, he inherited a team that was in sixth. You guys weren't that bad when he came in, and then he got all these signings in January, and you guys just it does feel like now we're in April. It's been this long. You've had international breaks. You've had weeks and weeks with the team training. We still don't know what his best starting lineup is. We don't know what lineups he wants to play. We don't know who his best players are, you know, so you have no idea what this is 6-7 months in. They hired him in October, didn't they?
Earlier than that, it was like early September, because remember, it was around Labor Day at the end of the summer. I remember I was away at Bethany Beach for like a long weekend.
And we don't know what Potter's best lineup is. You know, he doesn't play as the same starting 11 ever. It's just, it seems like he was a little out of his depth. We call him the Tinker Man at Brighton. And I think he was at a good place in Brighton. And look how Deserbe's doing. Deserbe is, Brighton are above Chelsea right now, doing great. Potter, I bet, regrets it now. So it's just craziness at Chelsea. Absolutely insane. Typical Chelsea fucking drama every single week. So
the favorite to take over, the betting favorite at least, is Julian Nagelsmann. For now, there's a Liverpool game, a home game tomorrow, Tuesday, where Bruno Saltor, one of the assistants, he will, you know, be the interim manager for that one. But Javier, what would you think if Julian Nagelsmann was hired? Would that be an overall positive hire?
I think so. You know, he's you were calling him the German Potter. I don't think he's a German Potter.
I think he's better. He's definitely better and has more experience at higher levels than Potter.
I mean, he's got tons of Champions League experience, you know, with Leipzig, with Bayern Munich.
Hoffenheim, you know, even. He got Hoffenheim into the Champions League. Yeah.
I mean, he's had a track record of developing young players, namely players like Christopher Nkunku, Timo Werner, you know, pretty much there's a huge, even when Emile Smith Rowe was on Leipzig for a 6 month loan, you know, he developed a lot under Nagelsmann. I think at Hoffenheim as well, he was also under him there. So you can tell that this guy's already a coach that players know, that players want to play for. And he already knows English perfectly. I think he'd be a great fit. I think he'd be much better than Graham Potter. And I think it would be a big boost for Chelsea.
Do you think this is just Chelsea's reaction to Bayern Munich hiring Thomas Tuchel? You know, like I don't think we'll beat Real Madrid, full disclosure. But if we somehow did manage to beat Real Madrid, if we had Julian Nagelsmann as our coach then, and Bayern Munich managed to beat Manchester City, then it would be Tuchel's Bayern versus Nagelsmann's Chelsea. It would be the former managers against their former clubs.
That'd be an amazing storyline if that actually ended up happening.
Not very likely, like I said, but, you know, it is a wrinkle. And when I was saying to you that Nagelsmann is like the German Potter, I didn't even mean it like in a negative way. I think there's been so much negative press around Potter that if by saying that Nagelsmann is the German Potter, it seems like a slight against him. I literally just meant that as he wouldn't be some sort of, you know, magic like stardust that you would just sprinkle on the team and we'd be playing better all of a sudden. He would need the same amount of time to work with the players to figure out which ones need to be sold this summer, which ones he can like work with and develop.
At least he'd have the last 10 games of the season to
do it. Yeah, so and I'm not that certain that he's going to take the job right now because there are rumors that he's looking to take a little bit of a break. So maybe they make an agreement with him. We have an interim manager for the rest of this season, and then he comes in the summer. That may not be the
worst
thing
either. Spurs
are
also looking for a manager. We haven't talked about that, or we did, but Antonio Conte's out at Tottenham, and they still haven't gotten a manager.
Spurs are a shit show because not only are they looking for a manager, but
they're
director
in fifth
of sport.
Right now, and they can still you know get Champions
Javier,
League. They need like immediate success now.
It's not just Conte that's out. It's their director of football, Fabio Paratici, who you know, last November was involved in that whole Juventus thing that's been going on with what exactly was it, with all of the plumping up payments and everything over the last 10 years. They're being charged for that, and he's being charged for that too, and FIFA put a worldwide ban on Paratici himself, so he's had to, you know, step down or take like a leave of absence until that's been sorted out. So they don't have a director of football either. And they just kind of seem
Alex,
like a
what
mess.
What about Luis Enrique, Alex? He's jobless.
For Chelsea or for Tottenham?
For Chelsea, Alex.
Luis Enrique, I wouldn't be against that, but he would kind of seem like Maurizio Sarri 2.0. I'm not really sure we want someone who's, you know, a full idealist, like trying to play like sexy possession football. We need someone who can, you know, help get us going in the attacking third, definitely. But we need someone who can also figure out the opposite end of the pitch as well. And personally, I think Nagelsmann would be a better fit for that.
And yeah, he seems Arsenal like he's got a bit Luis more Enrique charisma for, as well. For the job after we sacked Unai Emery, and we did not choose him. So take with that what you will, but I think he would still also be a good signing. I don't. Nagelsmann was not available at the time, but I would have definitely taken Nagelsmann. I think Nagelsmann's the type of coach that if he has a young team like Chelsea have right now, he could really develop the team and take you guys back into that, at least the Champions League level. You know, I think he's good enough to do that.
Yeah,
so I think you have to go for him.
For sure. So, well, let's talk about one more managerial sacking before we move on to whatever recaps we want to do. Brendan Rodgers, like I said, is out at Leicester. They were up 1-0 against Crystal Palace over the weekend, and then Crystal Palace came storming back. And
Pochettino back in Spurs, by the way. That would be
that's a possibility.
A good move for them.
But Brendan Rodgers, his team had the lead over the weekend, and then Roy Hodgson's Crystal Palace. Haven't talked about that. He's back at Crystal Palace. They came storming back and won 2-1 right at the death. So,
God, he's old. He's 76, guys. I was watching footage of him just walking down the tunnel and saying hi to everybody again. I mean, his eyes were so lit up. He was so happy to be back managing. It's so great to have Roy Hodgson back. Class act.
I mean, it hasn't been that long. He came in halfway through the season at Watford last year.
Yeah, but you thought he was gone,
and they got relegated. So
yeah, but. But for Crystal Palace, at least, it was great for him to be back there. And the Watford one was kind of like they threw him to the Wolves in that one. You know, that was a low chance of success with that shitty Watford team. Anyway, there had been a bunch of managers before him that had failed. So, but specifically with Crystal Palace, I mean, getting this win was huge. They lost Wilfried Zaha to like a groin injury, like at the end of the first half, where he was just running with the ball and just collapsed. Looked like he had gotten shot, but you know, I think he's done for the season if he's good at having an injury like that, and to still find, you know, Eze, beautiful free kick off the bar. I know it hit the back of Schmeichel's head, but
dude, not Schmeichel.
Oh, not Schmeichel. Iverson's head. Yeah, but Schmeichel's been gone for a while, but yeah, no, it just. Crystal Palace, it seemed like it shot life back into the place. I think a lot of people were down about the Vieira sacking and maybe bringing in Roy as, who's a relegation-threatened specialist savior, and immediately getting the win is going to be a huge push for Crystal Palace. They have a very, quote-unquote, easy run of games to end the season, pretty much all against bottom half of the table team. So
I mean, it's easy, but they're games that have huge swings in the relegation battle. So if they lose them, then those games aren't so easy.
They're going to be gritty games to end the season for sure.
And that Palace loss, or Palace win, and Leicester loss puts Leicester down in 19th place, just above Southampton in 20th, who lost to
Ranieri
West Ham.
Ranieri back in at Leicester?
Who knows? I haven't heard anything about who they're going to bring in. I don't know if Ranieri would be the right one. That would seem kind of. I would start leaning towards Leicester being one of those teams that might get relegated now.
Or Potter in
Potter
at Leicester.
It would be a huge swing from, you know, like competing in the Champions League to being in a Premier League relegation battle. But that actually may not be the worst idea.
Now, I wonder if I know that I've seen usually when coaches get sacked from Chelsea, they take 1 or 2 year hiatuses because they're getting insane amounts of money to be paid to them to just do absolutely nothing. So I wouldn't blame Grant Potter if he just wants to relax and go on a beach and go on vacation with his family for the next couple of years and just enjoy Chelsea's money.
Yeah, I mean, he probably got a very big payout. So, yeah, that wouldn't be surprising either. But if he wants to jump back into it, I think Leicester would definitely need him at the moment. All right, what games from this weekend do you want to talk about? I know you want to talk about the Arsenal-Leeds game, but I'm telling you right now, man, there were so many other
games. I'll get it out of the way super quick, Alex.
All right,
Gabriel Jesus is back. Got his brace. He scored 5 goals in the Premier League season before in like October. He hasn't scored since October. He got injured at the World Cup. It's been now 4 months since then. And he comes back, and he still has two more Premier League goals in this game, and that's 2 more than Richarlison has gotten the entire season. And Richarlison starts in the Brazilian national team.
Why are you?
I just want to point out why Gabriel Jesus should be starting on the Brazilian national team. It's ridiculous that trash can Richarlison plays. But this was, same old Arsenal, Alex.
Leeds.
A little bit. Yeah, we beat up Leeds. You know, Trossard, I think he has eight assists since he came in the last 4 months. He only had 1 assist. He had 8 goals and 1 assist when he came to Arsenal. Now he has 9 goals and 9 assists, or 9 goals and 10 assists. Ridiculous stats from Leandro Trossard since he came to us. He's been playing amazingly in that false nine role. And I was super surprised that Saka was benched for this game. But we were able to give Saka a rest, which hasn't happened all season. Saka has started, I think, 54 straight Premier League games for us. That streak came to an end, and he could have started in this game, but Arteta didn't think we needed him, and he was right. And it just feels inevitable right now. I know that there's some huge games ahead, so I'm not gonna say more, but this Liverpool game now at Anfield, I've never been more confident going into that game, thinking we should absolutely just go to Anfield and be super confident to go get a result, because the way that Manchester City, we can talk about the City Liverpool game, the way that Manchester City just dismantled Liverpool for 90 minutes straight. I mean, side to side, playing the ball side to side, switching the ball constantly. You know, we do that extremely well. You know, playing balls quickly into the box to get the wingers in dangerous positions in 1v1 situations with Trent and Robertson. It was just over and over and over and over again. And it felt like for Manchester City, they could have had way more, you know.
They ended up with 4.
Felt like without Erling Haaland, they were just so much more fluid. They didn't have this, you know, they weren't crossing the ball into the box ever. They were just keeping the ball on the ground, you know, all one touch or one or two touch football. And it was just champagne back to pretty much the best I've seen Manchester City play, because Liverpool got the opening goal. They probably should have gotten the second goal. There was a 2v1 situation with Salah and Jota that Jack Grealish got back as the last defender and like tipped the ball away from Salah's cross that was going into Jota for like a tap-in. And then Grealish goes on the other end and puts in like a beautiful assist, plays like a give and go and puts in a beautiful assist in for, I think it was Julian Alvarez, right?
Yeah, for the equalizer.
Who scores, you know, lo and behold, the player who's there in Haaland's stead scores a fucking goal. Like, I know we've been praising Erling Haaland all season, getting his 28 goals at this point by the Premier League. And, you know, he's been amazing in Champions League. I'm not trying to take anything away from him, but this is a team that's won the Premier League 4 out of the last 5 years without him. And the player who's there, Julian Alvarez, in his stead, also scoring goals, huge threat. You know, it feels like anyone who plays in that position in this Manchester City team is going to be, being given goals And it's just a blessing. I mean, Haaland even said it. He imagined himself on Dortmund last year, like when he was watching City, like, oh my God, I would get all these goals if I was on the team. And, you know, now
dude,
he's now he's just a monster.
Your foreign accent that you do for just every single player, like regardless of nationality, always geeks me.
It's amazing, Alex. Just don't say anything.
Oh yes,
otherwise.
Look at all these goals. Like
that is actually how Erling Haaland talks, though.
Okay. I just do the Terminator voice, like, oh yes, look at all of these goals. Actually, that was terrible. That was the worst Arnold Schwarzenegger Terminator voice I've ever done.
Get to the chopper now.
Get to the chopper. Well, that's Predator. I'll be back. So
I'll be back.
This is a hell of a week for Liverpool. I just want to add, they've got Manchester City that they lost on Saturday morning. They'll go to Chelsea tomorrow on Tuesday.
I'm hoping that's where they, you know, put the spanking on Chelsea. We got a Salah hat trick.
That's very possible.
They're tired. They come into the Arsenal game at Anfield, and we spank them, hopefully, and break our Anfield curse.
But it's a difficult week. They definitely need a result in that Chelsea game because it's going to be tough against Arsenal over the weekend. So
I have to pose a scenario, Alex, because if we do beat Liverpool at Anfield, I'm very confident we'll beat West Ham and Southampton before the City game. And we will have an 11-point gap between Manchester City and Arsenal going into that game because there is a FA Cup tie that weekend against Sheffield United. So we're going to have one more, even another Premier League game on them. I mean, do you think that's going to have a big influence going into that if we have a gap like that going into a game? I mean, if I'm City, I'm focusing on the Champions League if we have an 11-point gap, right? If we end up beating Liverpool, I think their huge hope right now is Liverpool at Anfield. They need Liverpool to show up against us.
Yeah, definitely.
If it's an 11-point gap, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if they beat us. Like
there is also it does matter if they beat you because there is still that Newcastle away game, which is a pretty good segue into the next recap because Newcastle leapfrogged Manchester United to go into third place with their 2-0 win against the Red Devils on Sunday.
Alex's team coming up in the rear saying they were going to make it to Champions League.
Don't call them Alex's team. They were just my pick out of, you know, Newcastle, Tottenham, or Liverpool to finish in the top four. And I still feel good about it.
But what about Manchester United? I said it on the last pod. I teased it. I said, oh, are we scared for Manchester United? And I said I was starting to get there. I said one bad result in their next game. And suddenly everyone behind them who picks up a win and they're dragged into it. And that's exactly what happened. So what do we think, Alex? I mean, are Manchester United collapsing? Like, I know that they were getting a decent run of results before this, but they had a couple shaky, you know, now it's been three games in a row since that 7-0 against Liverpool. They got a 0-0 with Southampton. Now they've lost 2-0. So it's been three games where they've been, you know, very, very bad. Their goal difference is only plus +4. You look at the teams around them, Newcastle United plus +22, Tottenham plus +12, Brighton plus +15, Brentford plus +9, Liverpool plus +15. They're the lowest goal difference of any of the teams in and around that Champions League spot.
A big part of that is Liverpool loss, obviously, the 7-0.
I know, but I'm starting to get worried about them, you know? I'm starting to think that they had a great run of form early in their season, but they're starting to equalize a little bit, and teams are starting to, I don't know if like want it more, but they were awful. That they were so bad against Newcastle. They created absolutely nothing. Newcastle shut them out completely, dominated the game from start to finish in possession, limited United's counterattacks completely. There was like one white horse half chance in the first half. That was, I think, the only shot that I remember Manchester United basically having. They brought on all their weapons. They had Martial. They had, you know, they don't even play Sancho.
Sancho came on. He came on for Anthony.
Anthony was absolute garbage. Just tricks and flicks when in his own half and just absolute shit anywhere in and around the opposing team's box. Bruno Fernandes was his crying bitch usual self. Completely useless. Sabitzer was pretty good. I'll say he was probably the only player that seemed like he gave a shit on the field. You know, Rashford looked like he maybe was carrying a knock, wasn't his usual self. But, yeah, just dire as hell from Manchester United. And from Newcastle, I thought that was one, probably their best performance of the season. I think Alexander Isak has brought this team not to like another level, but to a level of consistency now where they're a threat on the counterattack. His hold-up play is fantastic. You know, he's actually his build-up, his hold-up, and his link-up is better than any striker. You know, Callum Wilson came on and scored a goal. But Isak was the architect and the creator of that first go-ahead goal that pushed Newcastle into the lead. And Joe Willock, Hail End, baby. We got Willock this season. All right, listen to this, Alex. The Hail End gods that won the FA Youth Cup over you guys a few years ago. We have Bukayo Saka. We have Eddie Nketiah. We have Florian Balogun and Joe Willock are all godding it up this season, Alex. Hail End, Smith Rowe last season, the gods. You love how I turned it into Arsenal, Alex.
I'm used to it at this point.
no, but just to honestly, go back to that Newcastle,
game, I think we'd have to mention.
Newcastle were.
Dude, we have to Newcastle mention that awesome. Casemiro was out for that game, you know, with a second red card that he got a few weeks ago. So it's no secret at this point that Manchester United are just a completely different team when Casemiro isn't in there to reinforce their midfield. I'm not surprised by that loss, but we'll see much more and be able to gauge whether Manchester United's top four chances are like in trouble based off these next couple of games. They've got Brentford at home on Wednesday. They've got Everton at home on Saturday, and then they've got Nottingham Forest away the following Sunday before they go to Tottenham. So they've got a couple games here. Brentford will be tough, but Manchester United have usually put teams to the sword at Old Trafford in the Premier League this season. So
Brentford have two less losses than Manchester United this season. They have been one of the on-form teams in the last, since the World Cup break, along with Aston Villa and Brighton. So I'm not so confident about the Brentford game for Manchester United. I think if I'm Brentford, I'm confident going into that game that we can put a hurt on Manchester United. And, you know, Ivan Toney's a menace right now, scoring goals every game. And Brentford, I'm sure teams like Brentford and Brighton still believe they can get some sort of European football this season. They're in great positions, so a win against Manchester United would go a long way. A reeling Manchester United, we have to say, who's still in the FA Cup. You know, they're still in the Europa League. This team's just going to get stretched thinner and thinner this season. That's why I'm worried for them, because I feel like all these competitions that they're playing in, they're going to start getting more injuries, red cards, whatever it's going to happen. You know, you start playing these players three times a week, it's not going to hold up. So I don't think United have the squad for it. Ten Hag doesn't have the experience yet with this team for it. I think they need more players, and I think it's gonna unravel. I think it's already started to unravel.
Who did they get in Europa League? Manchester United.
Sevilla.
Yeah, and Sevilla have been shit in. I know that's Europa League, and they usually have like a good. They do well in Europa League, but they've been terrible in La Liga this season. So I would expect United to put them to the sword. And you know, there's not too many big fish in the Europa League anymore. There's Juventus and like who else really? You guys got knocked out. Like can you think of anyone else? There's Juventus, Sporting Lisbon, there's Feyenoord, Roma, and there's Bayer Leverkusen.
I mean, the team
versus
that beat us, Sporting.
Yeah, but they're playing Juve, so like one of those two teams, Juve or Sporting, yeah, are going to be out after this round.
Right. I was going to say Bayer Leverkusen as well.
They're not very good. Xabi Alonso has been like,
all right,
okay.
Sporting goals.
But again, Man United, if they beat Sevilla, they would play the winner of Juventus, Sporting Lisbon. So that would be a tough semi-final. But then in the final, they would have one of Feyenoord, Roma, Bayer Leverkusen, or Union Saint-Gilloise, the Belgian team that's done well this season. So, yeah, I think United, they can handle both, I think. It may make the top four battle like a bit more stressful than it needs to be. But I think they can handle both. Maybe win the Europa League and, you know, finish top four by the skin of their teeth right at the end of the season. All right, well, I think that should wrap things up for this week. Got anything else, Javier?
I was going to say, let's give a mention to Bournemouth, who got a huge win over Fulham at home this weekend. It lifted them out of the relegation zone, put teams like Everton and Leicester into the relegation zone. Leeds is just out of it by goal difference, and just tightened everything up even more over there. Because Southampton, it looked like, had kind of turned their form around. You know, they'd gotten a win against Leicester, draws against United and Tottenham. I know that they just lost a game against West Ham, which was also huge, because there were rumors that if West Ham lost that game, that Moyes was going to be sacked. And they would have been in the relegation zone with the Bournemouth win. So.
They were in the relegation zone, like,
they
going
were, yeah,
into
they
the,
were in the relegation
this weekend.
Zone. So just huge overall. Wolves are still in trouble. Crystal Palace, Crystal Palace down now. We're just, everyone is in mad trouble. So that relegation fight, I feel like this year is going to be, these teams are all going to go down to the wire. I think Southampton might be the only one that maybe gets relegated before the last day of the season, but I think every other team will be in it till the end. And, wins like this against Bournemouth that are picking up right now, beating Fulham, beating Liverpool, those are huge wins that might keep you in the league. So got have to mention them, you know?
Yeah, there's really big games in the relegation battle going on this midweek. Today, by the time you listen to this, it may have already finished. Everton will host Spurs, managerless Spurs. Stellini, the manager who was taking over for Conte when he went away for
surgery.
That sounds
like a dice
job.
Class,
yeah.
All over
Goodison
it.
Park.
Yeah.
Sounds like it. Then tomorrow, Tuesday, there's Bournemouth versus Brighton. Leeds,
Everton unbeaten in three, by the way.
Leeds versus Nottingham Forest, a huge relegation six-pointer. Leicester hosting Aston Villa, and like I mentioned, Chelsea, Liverpool. And then on Wednesday, there's Manchester United, Brentford, and West Ham versus Newcastle. So, Javier, thank you for jumping on this one again early morning. I do appreciate it. If you want to follow Javier, you can follow him at JavierRev9. You can follow me at ASMoss92 on Twitter and Instagram. And you can follow the podcast socials at GhostGoalPod. Enjoy the football this midweek and next weekend. And until next time, see you.